Welcome to the Harrington Star FinTech Diversity, Equity and Inclusion Discussions. I want to showcase people across our industry who are advocates for change. I love to celebrate the wins, but we know there is so much more to be done to ensure that change actually happens to build a truly inclusive industry. In these Diversity, Equity and Inclusion Discussions, I have a number of series. The Humans of FinTech, The Talent Surgery, The Maternity and Paternity Stories, and the longest running of all, the Women of FinTech podcast series. I do lots of work to drive change campaigns across our industry to increase inclusion within the workplace. So please contact me to see how we can partner together. You can contact me through LinkedIn or on my email, nadia.edwards-dashti@harringtonstar.com. In the meantime, enjoy the show. Welcome to the Women of FinTech podcast series. We are here today to celebrate the wins, raise awareness of the challenges, and walk the talk for change across the entire industry. Today, we are joined by Nicola Brea, the CCO of OptioPay, a Berlin-based open banking technology platform that is revolutionizing consumer ownership of bank data and works with businesses with large consumer bases internationally. She is passionate about building innovative businesses and has done so for 20 plus years. She describes herself as being from a generation of delivery and deliverables. And today she's here to share her story with us. So welcome. I'm so happy to have you on the Women of FinTech podcast series.
Nadia, it's such a pleasure to be here again.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And I think just for the people that didn't get to listen to the first one, can you tell us a little bit about OptioPay from your perspective and what makes you unique?
I'd be delighted to. OptioPay, the reason why I get up in the morning is truly because I believe we need to move from data protection to data ownership. And OptioPay as an open banking provider is enabling you to do that. So basically, you have to realize that your financial data has value, and then you can realize that. And whether that be in a financial value, which people go after first, they want to see financial value for sharing data. And the question is how much money is that worth? But there's also obviously information education. And then you can also, influence your behavior in a sustainable way because you see your CO2 footprint based on your transactions on and offline. So we kind of know what you do rather than clicking on sustainability websites. So there's an opportunity to plant trees, to rescue plastic, all these kinds of things. And we do that with large corporates as a SaaS model. And we're building an advertiser network, obviously, to make sure that we have amazing offers on our platform.
Wow. So there's so much that you're doing, which is really exciting.
What's unique about it, I guess, is that there are starting to be quite a few B2C companies around, but we are enabling our B2B customer base to create engagement, loyalty, and touch points with their customer base, which they all need. Banks, insurances, utility companies, tech, telcos, they all are scared of the large platforms. They should be. And we at least give them the chance to be competitive.
Yeah. And that's a great, great, great opportunity for people to be competitive. Now, I really want to hear more about you and your role. So every time we speak, it's almost like you're doing a huge thing for the business, but there's a variety. I know there's a big variety. So what does your role encompass?
Yeah, the question is I'm going to start with what it doesn't encompass. So I don't run product and engineering, and I also don't run legal, compliance, and finance. But apart from that, so from B2B sales through customer success, customer service, B2B2C and B2C marketing, platform monetization, that's the field. Oh, business operations, I forgot. That's the basically any way, shape, or form we make money is in my remit.
Wow. So it's a big remit. And I can imagine every day, therefore, no wonder when we speak, you're doing something different because every day it's got to be including something new, a different focus.
It is, but mostly it's every day I have to deal with everything. So I'm looking, it's we're going to talk about this later, but it's all about making sure there's some amazing people in the business so that I can start stepping away from every single minute operational detail at some point.
Yeah, of course. And I wanted to ask if you would share your experience as a C-level woman joining an established founding team, because It's a situation that actually, as these founding teams of different startups are beginning to grow, this is happening more and more. And I can imagine people will find your unique situation and story quite interesting.
I was really nervous about this. I decided for UpToPay after I had 3 or 4 other offers on the table. And I took a long walk with the CEO, who at that point was very much involved in product, but also in a lot of operational stuff. And he really was wanting someone to come in, but they weren't looking. So it was just someone had suggested we talk. And we did. And I thought it was brilliant. So then when I actually started, I was very curious to see how much the talk of wanting to really, you know, hand off responsibility and have someone at eye level, how much of that was talk and how much of that was actually true. And the transformation both Oliver and Marcus have gone through is fantastic, and it was honest. And we now have a fantastic CPO on board as well. A CFO is joining, and I think it's really become a partnership. And I think what helped as well is that I invested into the company so that I'm not only working for a salary, but that I'm also a shareholder. So I think that's also something that is important. And then they need to feel that you feel ownership of what you do and that you deeply care as they care. And that also sometimes they think of something, you've already thought of it. So it's a process, but I have to say that letting go has been something both of them have done over time remarkably well. Which now ends up to the fact that I run all of these departments, which I'm not sure yet if it's a good or a bad thing. But so that's obviously, you know, the sign of them handing over more and more work to focus on strategic and shareholder topics.
Yeah. And real reflection of the growth of the business and the maturity of it, I suppose.
Yeah. But a big learning, if we can stay on this for one more minute, is a big learning is that founders are absolutely amazing, and the energy they have and the relentlessness of never being satisfied with the status quo, never, ever. And is something that, and, you know, working with them pretty much like a family, you know, so close without actually seeing each other a lot these days. That is something that I find remarkable and sometimes a tiny bit exhausting, but it's given me great respect for them as well, because they're giving their all. And so that's quite remarkable, actually.
Mm. And I love that. I find that so inspiring that, you know, when you get to work with people who you can genuinely say are giving it their all, it's really wonderful to hear. Now, you're a big believer of future-proofing careers. Share some of that with us, please.
Well, when you start a new role, and I have been in the fintech world before, and I was really happy that I could stay in this fantastic space where, you know, technology changes so much and so many people's lives. I thought, what's the worst that can happen if I join this company? And I thought, well, I'm going to be working with, you know, creating value out of bank transaction data. That's not going to go away. And I'm going to help build and scale a company again, at a different stage from where I was working in before. I'm going to be able to influence and make decisions, good or wrong, and work with people. So nothing of that is going to be a wrong decision. So I think that's what I mean with that. So if the company wasn't going to be successful or we'd sell it, I would, you know, feel that I had not missed out on anything, because I learn every day. And I think if you're in a learning mindset, and if you're then working in a field that is developing and moving, then I think you need to see that journey as not a role and a position and a company title, but really how you develop as a person and what you can learn from everything you do. And so I think it's the field, it's the decision-making power, the ability to act, so not to have to agree everything with everyone. It is probably the scope of, you know, being close to, for me at least, or for a strategic, on a strategy level, to be able to shape that. And then to work with technology and amazing people that will, that you're driving something new in an emerging market. And I think that is future-proofing you, because whenever you decide you want to go somewhere else, what you've done is super valuable.
That's absolutely wonderful to hear. And that means so much to me. Obviously, being in the recruitment space, for me, it's about really helping people invest into themselves so they're becoming the best version of themselves. And I love talking to different companies about how are you doing that? How are you encapsulating that in your day to day? I love talking to people about new potential and new staff with potential rather than exact experience. And I think you've just encapsulated all of that, because what you said there is about a mindset of learning and actually about the field that we are in within fintech. This is emerging, it's changing, it's enlightened. So we need that those types of mindsets to be pushing it further forward. And I think what I love about what you said is it's taken me really easily to the next question, which is your passion around sponsorship, coaching, mentoring. And I think what you've just said there, you know, the two go hand in hand. So it'd be great to hear more of your people's strategy around that.
Yeah, I think I've always had amazing mentors myself. And it doesn't matter at what level you are, how old you are, you always need mentors. Sometimes my mentors are more now at peer level, but I also have an amazing friend in the UK who is a great role model to me. And so it never stops, right? So that's the first thing. And, you know, having the confidence to be able to reach out to someone who you can discuss something that's difficult for you is fabulous. So I've always experienced that. So when, you know, after maybe 10 years at work, I started to have lots of conversations with, you know, slightly younger people, mostly women, and it just got into that flow. And I believe that in a work context, as well being a leader, that's also how you work, right? You want to elevate others and you want to put others help other people grow. And that's, I believe, my role as a leader, to enable them to have that opportunity and to coach and to work with them to shine rather than manage them. If I need to manage them, something's very wrong. And then we're having very different conversations. But ideally, what I want to do is set frameworks and be a sparring partner and help them, you know, remove obstacles and really get them to focus on their work, but also on their communication, on their, you know, being on point, communicating up, creating networks for themselves outside of the company, but also in the company, all these things that you have to learn. And I think that goes beyond task management. And that's sometimes where my two founders and I differ a lot. And we also deal with people very differently. It's time consuming. So you don't just have 25 minute one-on-ones. You just rattle through everything that's going on, and which is why I tend to have my one-on-ones towards the end of the day, because then it gives me the opportunity to spend time with a person. And you also have that human connection.
So important, that human connection. And I'm really pleased you've mentioned that there are a number of ways of doing this, you know, and there are some people who believe they're doing right by their staff by rattling through something for 25 minutes and moving on to the next. But that human connection and what you've just listed there, I think, is so important. It's about raising people up, removing the obstacles, helping them focus on their work, creating the networks, essentially allowing them to be the best of themselves. And, you know, I think you can hear in my voice, this resonates with me so much. And I think it's absolutely so important. I'd love more of us to be working on this sort of basis to get the best out of our people, our teams, our business, and the economy.
Yeah, that's a big statement. That's very true. But I think also, look, leadership is not your style, right? So you need to understand how people want to communicate and what's important to them. And so whilst, you know, I may like to have a flow in a conversation mostly, but there are some people who really want to go through a structured list of things. And so I do that. I prepare for my one-on-ones. I ask everyone else to prepare. So we basically just combine notes before the one-on-one starts. And we say, these points, we want to cover these points. And so that there is a structure and that, you know, it's not just a chat. And you know, this leadership style that we've just spoken about and helping people, it can come across as being too nice. And so you have to find a really good mix of making sure that people will understand that you're in a business relationship and that it's about results, but you want to help them achieve their results and or exceed them. And I think when you're walking that line, I think then that's good. But I think that's also a female female thing that I don't think anyone would has a risk of thinking that I'm too nice. I don't think I would be where I am if I was just nice. But there is a risk that we come across like that, and it's something we need to be aware of.
I definitely relate to what you're saying there, and I like how you've sort of described it, because in my mind I see that tightrope, the balancing act. And you know, the next question that we're going to ask is also about a balance. And I've really, really loved what you've told me in the past about you and others achieving optimum productivity. And I think this is such a relevant point right now. So I'd love you to tell us more about that.
Yeah, I think it's quite common sense, but I think everyone has a different journey. And to me, joining a new and very ambitious startup in the summer and basically working from home the entire time was so all consuming that I thought I had to work more all the time. And I was working very silly hours in front of videos. And I forgot that, you know, feeding my body well and you know, working out was really a sign of really being better at what I do. And so I've introduced really healthy routines now, from, you know, working out early in the morning, cooking better food, preparing meals, meditating at night when I switch off the laptop. But also I've found myself a person who's a digital health and fitness coach, and it's an accountability buddy. So I have to report in with my activity stats and everything every night. So it gives me a balance of having to do something else outside of work. And I feel that I am more awake, that I'm more focused, that it's really enabling me to perform at my best. And I think that's how we like to look at it at ourselves. This is a high performing environment, and we need to manage ourselves well. And if you're too drained to, you know, eat well, because that's happened when I'm too tired, I just eat pasta rather than a salad, and my body craves carbs, and then that leads to not feeling well, that leads not to working out. And I think if you get down that route, you need to do something about it. And that's I'm starting to get quite religious about that now.
That's wonderful to hear, and I like how you said that about, you know, this is all in relation to a high performance environment. It's about, again, about being the best that you can be, and you've got to look after yourself to be able to be that. And I think it's brilliant that you've brought that up, especially in today's pandemic and what we're all dealing with. We've got to pause and think about ourselves. So thank you for sharing that. Now, my last question is more about what you would like to see in the industry to ensure that more authentic, real, genuine inclusion is being achieved.
That is a very tough question. As we spoke about, I'm in many hiring processes at the moment, and I find myself trapped and in non-diverse candidates sometimes. And I believe you just have to build that around you when you are one of, and I understand that I'm the only diversity criteria I fulfill is being a woman, which, you know, in a tech company in a C-level is already something. So I bring in very different people from my two founders, and so far they've impressed them, but none of them would have been hired based on the CV or based on their, you know, aggressiveness or, you know, assertiveness, assertiveness and being boisy. So I think even that helps. So that influences culture, and culture then influences, you know, the way the company makes decisions. And I think you can just be aware, and you have to increase that awareness across the board when you make hiring decisions, that you try not to fall into the trap of hiring the same people, but that you're really and genuinely looking for something that is bringing different perspectives to the table. Because we all cater for a very diverse customer base. And if we have, you know, as when I joined, I said, we've got a product that's created by 30-year-old men for 30-year-old men and white men. And I think now having a very, very international and actually quite female focused product team with, you know, different people from all over the world, with an Australian who runs our CPO, but literally we have, we counted it, we have 27 languages spoken in OptiPay, and we have about 35% women, which to us is quite good. And so we're working on increasing that. And I think that awareness is just important. And then also to live that diversity in the company. And we have academies where people present where they're from, and they explain where they've come to Berlin and how what their social circle looks like in Berlin, and these kinds of things. I think that that really contributes.
I think that's a wonderful thing. I haven't heard of other people doing that. I think that's brilliant and unique and something that I would love anyone listening to this podcast to go and talk to their peers, their colleagues, their managers about that, because I think that's a wonderful way of walking the talk for inclusion.
It's just so amazing. It's amazing what you see in terms of people. You know, you have to just ask them about non-work stuff, because people, I mean, whether they're from Egypt or whether they're from Brazil or from Ukraine, unbelievable what these people do outside of work, whether it's actually launching a sustainable fashion line just on the side, or, yeah, you know, being really involved in child projects, children, supporting children at home. And there's amazing stuff to discover. And even just taking the time, I take time every week to have a virtual coffee with someone I don't work with. And at the beginning, these people thought I was spying and it was weird. And now it's just, I think the water cooler talk has gone down and the conspiracy theories have stopped. But yeah, it's important to me to know everyone, but we don't talk about work in these calls.
That is absolutely wonderful. And again, very unique. I think that's something that a lot of people would say, I'd like to do that, and they don't find the time. And I think it's brilliant, because I know that you genuinely do that. And that's brilliant to hear that the conspiracy theories have gone down on it. Because I can imagine, because it's so unique, right? So they're thinking, oh, what's this about? You know?
And it's actually not, you never have the time. You just have to make the time.
Yeah, I completely agree. Like I used to say that about exercise. Oh, I don't have the time to do that. Well, you make the time. You know, I never would have thought I'd have had the time to have a baby in my life. Well, I have to make the time, and there's no choice now. But look, it's been absolutely wonderful listening to you and your update, having joined Optio Pay. It's such a nice add-on for the last podcast that we did. And again, thank you for all your insights and your journey and who you are and what you bring to this industry, because there's so many unique things here that we can all learn from. So it's been brilliant learning about you and sharing your journey on the Women of FinTech podcast series.
Thank you so much, Nadia, for having me. And, you know, you're an inspiration yourself with everything you do and all the time and effort you put into making this industry more diverse. And I can learn so much from you. So it's always a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you.
Thank you.